Did you do it?
Of course. I mean, come on.
Did you really do it?
No, did you really do it?
Of course I did it.
Really?
Oh my god, what?
I need to see this.
Of course.
Where's
I
the
see
footage?
No way.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited. I owe you $50. Nick owes you $50.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is the Craft Will Never Die podcast. My name is Blake Weber, and I'm joined by Nick Key, also known as Key Woodworks, and Jason Hibbs, also known as Bourbon Moth Woodworking. You can find me at the Weber Wood Shop. All three of us have YouTube and Instagram accounts, but you can find us collectively at Craft Will Never Die on Instagram. We're recording remotely from three different states around the country. I'm here in California, Nick is in Kentucky, and Jason is in Oregon State. But our microphones have brought us together once again, and we're super stoked to bring you episode number 4. What is going on, guys?
What's up?
Hello.
Jason, you just got back from a trip, didn't you?
I got back from a trip, man.
Tell us about it.
Oh my gosh. I just want to say, if you guys have not experienced what it's like to shed all responsibilities, ignore your clients, and disregard every important email, and just go someplace for fun, you should do it. Because that's
it's called childhood, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's called. But as adults, we never get to do that. And
oh, yeah.
Man, I went on a trip to Ireland for almost 2 weeks. Me and my absolute best friend in the world, a good buddy of mine named Casey, we had been thinking about doing this trip for a long time. And about a year ago, we said, like, hey, let's just buy tickets for a year out. That way we can't, like, back out of it. Because you're always so busy. Like, in the moment, if you try and decide to do something, it's like life's crazy, family's crazy, work's crazy. You're never going to do it. So we bought tickets a year ago. And just were like, hey, we're going to do this. And then the year came, and it was the worst time for me to just take off and go on a trip. I had so much stuff going on and clients waiting on things. But, man, was it fun. Just to
That's cool, man.
Let
That's
loose.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was absolutely – okay, so I won't tell you the entire trip because that would take the entire podcast. But I just want to tell you a few highlights because it was an insane trip. So – we spent most of the time in Ireland. We rented a car. We drove all over the place. We put about, I want to say, like 1,200 to 1,300 miles on our rental car. And Ireland's not that big, so we were like all over the place. But we started out the trip. We flew into London, okay? So we land in London. London Heathrow Airport's like a ways out of the city, and we'd never been there before. We're trying to figure out how to get to our Airbnb, which is like downtown somewhere. We couldn't figure out the buses. The train was like confusing, and so we're like, oh, we'll just get a taxi. So we get a taxi. He's taking us downtown. He told us it would cost like £80, which turns out to be like $120 to ride a taxi to your Airbnb.
What is that in board feet?
I think it's like 16 linear feet of like Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Man.
So he's taking us downtown, and both of us are like, well, this sucks. We just are out $120 like right off the get-go. And we get about halfway to our Airbnb, and the taxi starts smoking, and he pulls over and he's like, sorry, mates, something happened. I gotta let you out here. And we're like, in the middle of nowhere, we're like, okay, fine. So we're like, hey, it's London, whatever. We're just going to walk. We had backpacks. So we threw our backpacks on, started walking, and eventually we walk, like, we get into the heart of downtown. So we're walking in front of, like, Freedom Tower and the Parliament Building on one side. Westminster Abbey's on the other side. Big Ben is, like, right in front of us. So we're in, like, the most, like, iconic London place you could possibly be. And I'm looking at my phone trying to figure out, like, where we have to go. And Casey's, like, looking around at the street. And all of a sudden, I feel him, like, tugging on my back, like, Jason, 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 like, this desperate, like, pulling on my shoulder. And I look up, and not 10 feet in front of me, walking towards us, is Brian May, the lead guitarist from Queen.
Oh, man.
Like, curly-haired, beautiful Brian May. And me and Casey are literally, like, we're, like, in shock. Like, is this really happening? And we're just staring at him with our mouths open, and he's staring back, and he gives us this look of, like, yes, I'm exactly who you think I am.
Right.
Kind of like, I know you're staring at me. And then he gives us...
And he was like, Figaro!
No, that would have been sweet. Then he gives us a little, like, two-fingered salute of like, yep, I see you. And then he just walked off. It was the craziest thing ever. Like, of all the places to see the lead guitarist of Queen, we saw him in the most iconic London spot of, like... possibility. I mean, it was
I'm
crazy.
Sure you took a picture of that, right? So we would actually believe you.
No, that's the crazy thing. We were like in such shock that we just watched him walk by, and then he walked like way down the street, and we're like, oh my gosh, we should have taken a picture. But it was just impossible at that point. We did try and recreate it, and I pretended to be Brian May, and Casey took a video of me, but it wasn't the same. So anyways,
I was following along with your Instagram stories. Pretty entertaining. You set out some goals. You were gonna like barbecue in a castle and make love to a sheep and kind of thing. isn't that what it was? Did you reach those goals?
No, you have a few of those wrong. I hit every goal. Okay, so the goals were, I think, like, I wanted to listen to Gregorian chants in an old abbey. I wanted to pet a sheep, not make love to a sheep.
Oh, all right.
I wanted to light a fire in an old castle. I wanted to hand roll a cigarette overlooking the ocean. I did everything on the list except for light a fire in an old castle. Apparently, if you hashtag Ireland in your stories and the Irish government watches your stories and sees that you're going to light a fire in an old castle, they will literally send you a DM asking you not to do that.
Oh, snap.
Because that is exactly what happened.
They're not messing around.
So I decided that would be a bad idea to do that and then post about it after they specifically asked me not to. Apparently Ireland's super small if they're literally watching my Instagram stories. So no, it was.
I wouldn't think that too many people are hashtagging Ireland.
Yeah, apparently not. But man, it was an absolutely amazing trip. Ireland is beautiful. If you ever get the chance, go over there. And it's stinking affordable too. We stayed in Airbnbs the entire time, which is really cool because you're like not in a hotel. It's nice. We stayed in little cabins and houses, and I think the most we paid is like $70 a night for like a full cabin. It's just crazy what you can get over there. Oh, another crazy thing that happened on this trip. So we rented a car. We were driving all over the place. So you drive on the wrong side of the road in Ireland. That's number one. Like, okay, that's a little different. And then everybody drives manuals over there. Which I know how to drive a manual, but driving on the wrong side of the road means you're shifting with your left hand instead of your right hand while you drive on the wrong side of the road. So it's just like this added level of stress. And then on top of that, the roads are like the width of like one lane road in the States. I mean, probably even skinnier than that. And they expect two cars to go on that. So you're constantly like pulling over on the shoulder to let other cars go by and coming around corners and thinking it's going to be your last. And we had done so good for the first like 7 days. And then we went out to this little town called Dingle, insert Dingleberry jokes here. And outside of Dingle, there's this drive called the Slayhead Drive where you go way out on this point, kind of like almost like you're practically in the ocean. You're way out on this point and it's right on the edge of a cliff and the road's super narrow. And we were coming around this corner and there was a tour bus coming right at us. It was in our lane, basically like halfway in our lane, halfway in their lane. And so it was either hit the tour bus or swerve to the left as far as I could and try and miss it, which I did. But the left was like this grassy embankment, and then sticking out of the embankment was an old tombstone that I hit with my front left tire. And the tombstone acted like a ramp. And we launched up and turned sideways. We were in midair. I thought we were going to either roll or smash into the tour bus as we were
Dukes of Hazzard.
We came down on the like grassy embankment. We basically sliced a section of the grassy embankment off with the front of our car, and the front tire just like smashed, and the front left axle snapped in half, and we slowly rolled to a stop in some old farmer's driveway. And then we had to wait for a tow truck and drive an hour to a new town to get a new car. And I had the full coverage insurance, but what they don't tell you with the full coverage insurance is it covers everything except for tires and wheels.
No way.
And tombstones.
So we had to pay for a new tire and a new wheel. And it was one of those things. But we were okay. And the trip went on. So,
Let me ask you about the right-hand drive in a car. I've seen a lot of right-hand drive cars, but I've never sat in one. When you sit, is the clutch still on your left with your left foot? So
So
brake,
the clutch
gas,
and the brake is normal, just all like the same. It would be in the States. It's just the stick shift is on the left.
Same with the gear, like in sequential gear. So first on the top
gears
left,
are,
down,
gears are same. All that's same. The same. Yeah.
So it's just backwards in your brain with right hand and left hand. It's
only
weird.
Twice did I just, out of habit, drive on the wrong side of the road, and Casey quickly was like, other side, like screaming at me. So
he wasn't going to sleep in the car.
No,
on that
he was
trip.
Not going to sleep in the car. But we got pretty good at that little stick shift, man. And it really stunk because at first they gave us a 2019 VW Golf. It was like super sporty. It was a week old when we got it. So we were just zipping around and that thing was a lot of fun. And then our new car, they didn't trust us anymore. So they gave us some European POS. I don't know. It just had no get up and go. It felt like I was driving like a jet ski on land that didn't want to do anything.
That's awesome. Dude, I commend you for buying tickets a year out and then still going.
Well, but that's what you do. I mean, you buy the tickets and then it's like if you don't go, you're out, you know, that money and everything.
Yeah. So. I know. We've always planned to go on vacations with friends and then, you know, time comes to buy and they're like, I don't think we can go this time. We're going to have to pass on this one. But that's pretty awesome that you
exactly
just said we're
you
going.
Do it. Yeah, you just got to do it a ways out. And another thing, like, I give lots of business advice to people, but this is the most fun business advice I ever give to anybody. If you have a business, like a small business, and you have regular business expenses, get yourself a mileage credit card. And use it like a debit card and put every single business expense on your miles credit card because I have not bought a plane ticket for full price in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
And I say like, oh, we would have been out the money if we didn't go. But the tickets for me and Casey to go to Ireland were $11 a piece.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
Points. So it just makes traveling so much easier. And it's nice because you work really hard. You have those business expenses and then you can like let off steam and go on a cool trip for not very much money. So
yeah, that's
if you're not
killer.
Doing it, get on it.
Killer. That's cool. Yeah. It's been way too long since I've traveled. We've kind of been working on the house and stuff like that instead. So it's time. We're going to get back around to it.
But, yeah, man. Traveling is, it's just this addicting thing, seeing other parts of the world. And it really makes you, it really humbles you. I mean, we get so caught up. I feel like the American mentality is just to assume like America's the best and we're the best at all these things and we're great. And like America's an awesome, great country, but such a big world. And there's so many people that have been like so many countries that have been around so much longer than the United States and have been doing things for so many years. It's just really cool to see some of that history.
Yeah, I remember feeling the same way. I mean, I've done very little traveling, but the few times that I've gotten out of our little neck of the woods, I remember feeling that same way for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And the food, oh my gosh. We just like pub crawled literally from like pub to pub. Oh, it's so amazing breakfast over there. So
What's a typical breakfast over there?
Okay, so my favorite breakfast over there, you actually get at like any like gas station, mini mart. Because they have these like deli counters and they have these things called, it's just called a breakfast roll. And I always say like put everything on it. So what they do is they take like basically it's like a French baguette and they slice it in half. And then they put butter on both sides and ketchup on both sides. And then they put two hash browns in there. They put four strips of bacon, two sausages, a black pudding, a white pudding, two eggs, cheese,
and a little sprinkle of heart attack.
Yeah,
and
they
roll it all up into this roll, and it is so good. It's basically like a full Irish breakfast in a sandwich.
Wrapped up.
Yeah.
Man.
And it's like €3. It's like $3. I mean, it's super cheap.
It's your calories for the week.
Yeah, I definitely didn't lose weight on this trip.
Nice.
But anyways, I'm back. I came back to a pile of work. Felt really great to get
back
into the
to reality
shop today. Yeah. But no, it's good to be home. Trips have this way of like resetting you and you come back like refreshed and man, you're just ready to get back at it. So I'm back. Woo!
Nice.
That's awesome.
But enough about me. Nick, what's up with you, buddy?
Well, Coming off of your talk about traveling, I actually just found out a couple days ago that I'm going to be going to Africa in June or July. I can't remember what at the end of one of those months, but I'll be going to Uganda for the job, doing a little bit of playing some bass and doing some filming. So I'll be doing some storytelling over there and playing in a band. So
you Uganda Instagram that stuff?
I Uganda. Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm going to bring all my gear to try and make like a vlog of, you know, daily stuff going over there, cuz I've actually never been overseas. I've been to like Canada and Mexico and the Bahamas, Jamaica, you know, the Caribbean, stuff like that. But I've never been overseas, so I've not been to Europe, and I definitely haven't been back to the motherland. So I'm super excited to go see what Uganda is like. What?
The motherland is in Germany?
Actually, I'm Danish, so I don't even know why I said that.
I was kind of wondering the same thing.
I'm as white as it gets.
Yeah. All right.
You're going way back.
Yeah. So to go to Africa, you need to get like shots and stuff, right?
Yeah. I was talking to one of the guys that's heading the trip up, and he's like, the one that hurts is the yellow fever shot. Mm. And I was like, what do you mean hurts? And he's like it's painful. Like the shot hurts. So that's something to look forward to.
Dude, I heard that they have this virus in Africa that if you get it, it makes these like pustules on your head and then worms shoot out of them.
Okay. Oh.
But I saw that on an episode of That 70s Show, so I don't know if it's that accurate.
That's a pretty good source.
But anyways, watch out for that, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So other than traveling to Africa, how's the woodworking world treating you?
So the job's been super busy. We've been, you know, coming up on Easter, and that's the busy season for us. So I've been just slammed at work doing stuff, and we're trying to launch an online campus. So I've been doing a lot of behind the scenes video editing and music.
Hiding
video.
A bunch of eggs and stuff.
Yeah,
for Easter.
Yeah, hiding a bunch of eggs. that's funny, but no, I've been just, you know, slammed with stuff, and I haven't been in the shop much. The last time I was in the shop, I got to play with the India ink on the drawer fronts for that cabinet I'm making, which is still not
all
done. No, it's not done, man.
Do you have a timeline on that? Or
no, thankfully like... I don't. The client's just like, get it done whenever you can get it done. And I'm
nice.
Totally cool with that. That's been...
Doesn't it weigh on your conscience, though, that like, there's a lot of people getting their oil changed that don't have coffee to drink?
Yeah, I mean, they're probably drinking... from, you know, the floor, the coffee maker just sitting on the floor. I feel terrible about that. And every day I go out to work.
A little bit of motor oil mixed in.
Yeah, a little 10W30 on top. But every time I walk by that cabinet in the shop on my way out the door, I'm like, I need to work on that some more. And I just haven't had much time. But
yeah, after Easter.
Yeah, after Easter for sure. But like I said, I did get a chance to India ink the drawer fronts. And now it turned out really cool. That stuff is really fun to play with. Just make sure you wear gloves, because on one occasion I took my glove off and I had like a black index finger and my forefinger were black for like 3 or 4 days, because it sinks in. It's legitimate ink. But it turns out really, really nice. The plywood is birch and it soaked in real nice. I did two coats just to make it, I don't know, darker. I don't even know if it actually made it darker, but I just wanted to put another coat on. The first coat I put on with...
Does it raise the grain when you put it on at all? Like,
no.
Get the sand in between that? Or?
It didn't raise the grain one bit.
Is it like an oil, or is it water-based, or what is it?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing.
I don't know if it's oil-based or not. I would assume it is, because, I mean, if it was water-based, I would think it would pop the grain a little bit, but it didn't pop mine at all. I would bet that it was oil, but who knows? Somebody will probably correct me, just like they correct me on the ebonizing, because I got like 5 or 6 people DMing me about ebonizing.
Oh, yeah. We got hammered for that one.
I told you guys we would.
Oh, yeah. We definitely.
That's perfect, though. For anybody listening, go ahead. We're wide open.
Yeah. So
correct us all day long.
So here's what I learned about ebonizing. Ebonizing is actually a chemical reaction in the tannins of the wood that turn the wood black. So you use something like an iron acetate.
Iron oxide.
Iron oxide. Yeah, an iron oxide. So if you, you know, break it down simply, if you use like steel wool and vinegar.
Steel wool and vinegar, yeah.
That would make your iron oxate and it would ebonize, so to speak. But to me, like that doesn't turn stuff black. I've never seen wood turn black.
I think it can, but you have to have the right like chemical like recipe. And that's why I think people, because I've always heard people say like, oh, ebonizing is this really hard thing. And in my mind, I was like, well, if it's just putting black stain on stuff, I don't get that. But I think that's what's hard about it is you have to have the chemical mixture just right to get it that way. And you have to use it with the right kind of wood. It's not going to work with like you can't ebonize maple that way probably because it just doesn't have the tannins that oak does, you know?
Right. Well, I put the some homebrew steel wool and vinegar on some oak that I've got, and it didn't turn it black.
It was like purple?
Yeah. It wasn't black, but it really wasn't kind of purple. It was kind of in between like a kind of like a light bluish. It had more blue in the wood than anything. But I don't know. I've seen people turn oak black with stuff, but I think those people are putting stuff like coffee grounds to give that darker black.
I've used the steel wool and vinegar before to like age. I've used it on cedar a lot. It works great on cedar because it's less tannins. And it gives it that like really like weathered gray look. The main problem, because lots of people have trouble with the steel wool and vinegar, the main issue that people have with it is they think, oh, if I leave the steel wool in like really long, that's going to make a like even stronger. But that's not true. What happens if you leave the steel wool in too long, it starts to rust and then it just turns everything orange and then it looks terrible. So you really just put the steel wool in there for like, I don't know, 8 hours and then take it out and it's good to go. But I haven't had it turn anything black. It's got to have another component added to it.
Yeah, there's got to be something else mixed in there.
Okay,
chemically.
People, Remus again. Yes. Send us the DMs. Tell us what it is. We're sorry.
Slide in the DMs.
No, that's all right.
So you put
But I've been interested to see how that turns out because I've got some projects coming up. I've pretty much always just done like whatever the natural color of the wood is, but it's something that I've been wanting to try, so... Yeah. You'll have to let me know how it goes for you with the Indian ink.
I asked you this last time, but you put the Indian ink on and then you still have to put like a polyurethane over the top or a lacquer or something, right?
Yeah, you need some sort of protection. So yeah, I'm gonna be spraying lacquer. But I was gonna say the thing I learned about applying the Indian ink was I posted a video where I kind of just squirted it on and then brushed it on. It didn't quite go on as even that way. Like it looked almost like as where it landed first, it soaked in the quickest. So the next time around when I did it again, I used a foam brush with a small like cup and just, you know, dabbed the brush in and then would wipe across the face of the drawer front. And it worked beautifully after that. It was nice, real even. And you can still see the grain, which is really odd because it's like it's been painted.
Yeah. That's the same with that Rubio pre-color. It's crazy how dark it is, but you can still see the grain like perfectly.
Yeah.
So is it this kind of thing where you put it on and then you have to wipe off the excess or you put it on and it's just it?
No, that's it. It soaks in.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I had to do a couple coats on the edge banding because it was so porous. So like it didn't quite soak. I guess I didn't get enough on the first time to where some of the pores showed up, and you can still see the white, like spots.
Pimples.
Yeah, little
pores.
Exactly, the pores. Yeah.
Blackheads.
Opposite of blackheads. If they were blackheads, I would have left them. But yeah, it was just a weird experience to watch that wood go from such, because birch is like white, and then now it's black. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm excited to see it all finished.
Dramatic.
Up.
Yeah.
Are you afraid though, like scenario, okay, random scenario. Someone's getting their oil changed. They go in to get a cup of coffee. Let's say that this oil change place decides to get black coffee mugs. They pour black coffee in the coffee mug. Are you afraid they're going to set down their mug and not be able to find it again?
Yeah.
Just saying that is a possibility that you have to think about.
I'll tell you what though, whoever decided, I don't know if this was your suggestion or theirs, but whoever decided that this thing should be jet black in a mechanic facility had the right idea, because
genius.
If anything other than that would have been covered in like oil stained fingerprints everywhere.
They'll never have to clean this thing ever.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
That coffee will taste so good.
just don't get the coffee and the oil mixed up when you're going to drink it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, cool, man. Well, hopefully Easter will whiz by and you would get back to that and it'll be awesome, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Well, sweet, man. That sounds like a cool project. I can't wait to see how that turns out. We should probably take a little break and maybe get a little word from our sponsor. What do you think? Jason, what do you got for us?
All right. Well, today's episode is sponsored by Postmortem Epoxy Pores. Have you lost a loved one lately? Maybe grandma or grandpa has gone on to a better place? Well, don't just put them in a pine box and stick them in the ground. At Postmortem Epoxy Pores, you can savor their legacy while you savor your Thanksgiving dinner. We will cremate and insert your loved ones into a batch of epoxy that you can then use to make your favorite river table. Walnut, maple, oak, the choice is yours. But dine on top of those you love with Postmortem Epoxy Pores, guaranteed to increase your family fun.
Yes.
Guaranteed to increase the fun at game nights. Postmortem Epoxy Pores. Oh, get yours today.
I'm glad they're at least cremated.
You're gonna have to edit that a little bit, but
I don't think we are. I think that was perfect. thank you, Jason, for this week's sponsor.
That's crazy.
All right. So what about you, Blake? What do you got going on in your shop, man?
That's going to be hard to recover from. I might need a minute. let's see. Okay. So the CNC. I got the CNC.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's been my obsession for the past 2 weeks. It showed up, big old box, and I'm so stoked. I've been having so much fun setting it up, and man, that is a learning curve.
Did you get it all set up?
I did. Well, yeah, I did. Pretty much like 99% set up. There's still like some calibration and some stuff that I should probably do to it. But
nah.
So what brand
done,
is it
I've
again?
Done a lot. So good question, because last time I was talking about it, actually it was when I was editing this podcast that I realized that I think you guys both thought that I was getting an X-Carve.
Totally thought you were getting an X-Carve.
Yeah.
Because well, no, I saw you chatting with the X-Carve people at a Workbench Con, so I just assumed. But you must have turned your back on them, apparently.
Yep. Well, it's a Shape Oco, so that's I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. We're Shape Oco bros.
And in case anybody's wondering, because we're throwing around some brand names here, we're not sponsored by any of these people. In fact, I think, Jason, you have an X-Carve sitting in your shop, right?
Yeah, so let me tell you about my X-Carve, okay?
Okay.
I do have an X-Carve sitting in my shop. I have never turned it on and or used it.
Okay.
But that's not because I don't like it. This is what happens, okay? I will say they sent it to me, which I loved. I really appreciated that. But I'm so busy, and with the X-Carve, you have to, I mean, maybe it's the same with the Shape Oco, you have to put the entire thing together, like, piece by piece, like, basically build the entire thing.
Yeah.
And so they sent it to me, and it was in, like, literally, like, 50 different boxes, and it sat in my garage, and I was like, man, I don't know when I'm going to have the time to actually put this thing together on top of client orders and this and that. And then somebody messaged me on Instagram, and they were like, hey, I'm in the area. Are you looking to take on any interns? And I was like, no, unfortunately, I'm not. I'm just not like in the market to get an intern or any what, because they wanted like a paid position. So I told them like, no, nicely. And then they wrote back and they're like, okay, well, if you ever change your mind, like, let me know. I'd love to just learn from you, even if I'm not getting paid. And one thing I'm really interested in is CNC woodworking.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, really? And I asked what they did. And they're like, I'm a mechanical engineer. That's my full-time job.
You're hired.
So I was like, well, yeah. Funny you should mention that.
Welcome
I have
aboard.
A CNC machine sitting in my garage in boxes. If you want to put it together, I was like, I'm sure it will teach you all about CNCs as you put this thing together. It would be a great experience. And they were like super stoked. They're like, yes, I want to do that. So Gary, my boy Gary, he's an awesome dude. Great woodworker, by the way. He's been coming over and putting my CNC together, and he's got it completely put together. He hasn't actually run it yet, but it is all put together. But I've yet to actually do anything, nor do I know how to do anything with it. Gary probably knows. Nice. And hopefully he'll teach me at some point. But
well, and in an episode, last episode or a couple back, you said, Blake, why don't you put the thing together, figure out how to use it, and then teach me how to use
it.
Yeah,
exactly. I have nothing against CNCs. Let me just say that right at the beginning. But right. I've never used a CNC in my life, so I just don't know anything about them.
Yeah. And so my kind of what's going on has been the CNC, setting it up, getting it going, learn the huge learning curve of the software and all that, learning how to use this thing. So I thought that'd be kind of the perfect topic for today too. So I'm going to segue right into our topic, which is CNC machines.
Today's topic is CNCs, brought to you by Craft Will Never Die.
Right. And I thought that was perfect because we have one person who's got a CNC machine in their shop and never used it, Jason. One person who's had a CNC machine for a while and used it for a bunch of projects, which would be Nick. And me, who I'm kind of in that first like week or two of literally setting the thing up and literally just figuring out how to use it right now. So I'll give a little recap of what I've been doing in the past couple of weeks and what I've learned. And then I want to hear a little bit about what Nick has learned actually using his for a little while. But Nick, how long have you had yours, and which one do you have again?
So I've got the Shapeoko just like you do, and it's the XXL. So it's the largest bed they've got. And I actually need to see how long I've had it. I've had it for quite a while. I've got a story highlight somewhere. Let me see if I have a date on it. 70 weeks ago.
Whoa, so that is accurate to a creepy level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like when you're like, how old's your baby? And they tell you in weeks, you're like, I have no idea what that means.
My baby is 72 days and 14 hours and 12 minutes old since the moment of penetration from my wife's cavern.
Right.
70 weeks. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So put that in terms of months, because I can't do weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
52 weeks in a year, divide that by two. So a year and a half.
Like a year and a half.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Okay.
Getting all mathy up in here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've had a year and a half, and I've learned a ton. So just like you, it was pretty steep learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I'm at right now. But you learn the most in the first couple of weeks, and then, you know, keep kind of adding to that. So yeah, the thing showed up, obviously, it just like Jason was saying, it was in pieces. So I had to get put together. And I mean, it's pretty straightforward. There was some instructions online, which, as with any instructions, there's always kind of a little bit left to desire in terms of, they had some great pictures and stuff like that. But there was a couple places where I actually like put the thing together completely backwards and got pretty deep into the assembly phase. And then I was like, that's okay. All right. Back up. There's an hour lost.
Were you able to disassemble it and do it again? I mean,
yeah.
Cause I'm thinking like in terms of IKEA, if you assemble something wrong at IKEA, you can't take it apart.
Oh yeah.
You get one shot and that's it. But I assume with this, it's built well enough.
No. I mean, everything's like screwed together, and most of it is screws going into threaded, parts. So I had no problem taking it apart, but it was like, all right, well, there's an hour lost disassembling and reassembling it the right way.
Yeah.
I did that once or twice, but I figured it out. And then, it just kind of progressed from there, where once I got the thing together, then the first thing that you do is like download a file where basically you literally like zip tie a Sharpie to the router and download this file. So
Write Hello
its own
World.
Name with its Sharpie. Yeah. Hello World. Except I know. And that's what I kept hearing is like, that's the Hello World thing, but it didn't write Hello World. It just wrote its own name. Shapeoko. So
part of you afraid that like when you press that button that it's gonna like transform into this thing and just like grab you by the neck and
absolutely
slice your head off like I am boss now?
Yeah, especially
give
when
me
it
soul.
Especially when it wrote its own name and it's like so it's self-aware and it's
gonna...
at 12:15 2019.
I'm sure this thing's probably
became
smarter
self-aware.
Than I am. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
So I did that, and I had, you know, it was like 80% smooth and 20% me just pacing and swearing to myself, trying to figure out what was going on. But finally got the thing together, and then I started making some cuts with some of the built-in software that comes with it. And it was just kind of back and forth between like, woohoo, and like, ah, what's going on? You know, I made it crash into its own like steel base one time and just absolutely shattered one of the bits, just metal fragments everywhere. And so I had a few snafus here and there, but for every moment of frustration, there was, shortly after that, figuring out what I did wrong, and you know, there was another moment of exciting success. So just kind of little successes, but built on one another.
I mean, I got a question because for me, like, it was a time thing. Like, okay, so you have to spend all this time putting the machine together. That's half the time you have to spend. But then
it was a full day for like day and a half just getting the machine set up and to where I could make my first cuts.
Really?
Yeah. But then.
I was filming it too, and you know, kind of messing around.
Wait, it didn't take you that long?
No, yet? If you watch my stories, if you go to my highlights and watch my stories, it took me a minute and a half.
Well, that's because you're a superhuman.
That's only like that's like six stories.
Let me clarify that a little bit. It was probably assembling the thing was probably like 2 or 3 hours, stretched to maybe 3 or 4 hours because I was kind of filming it in between. But there was a lot of like, okay, now that I have the thing like physically put together, you have to adjust this and then try that and then adjust this again, and try this again. So there's a lot of messing around after.
I am not the appropriate one to speak about this because I didn't actually put mine together, but I watched Gary do it and it seemed like he was having a time. And I want to venture to say that I think that the X Carve is a little more difficult to put together than the Shape Oko, but I think that's their business plan, is that they can bring their price point down lower because there's more assembly on your part than their part. But watching Gary put that thing together, man, it took him a long time. I don't know if I'm smart enough to do that.
Well, their assembly comes.
It definitely almost you got to be ready to put some work in. It wasn't easy.
But what I was going to say is you have the time spent to do the assembly, so that's like half the time. But then there's this whole other part where you have a software that you then have to learn how to use. So, I mean, have you started to kind of figure that out? Or
and that's something that I started researching long before the machine ever showed up on my doorstep, and that's been definitely the biggest learning curve of the whole thing. So I made a list of takeaways that I started putting together, and a lot of them are in part for the software. So I'm gonna sort of go to that on this list, and the first one on this list is,
I have a question before you start on the list. Have you taken the is it Enneagram test? Have you taken that?
The what?
You know, Enneagram. Where like the signs assigns you a different number. I just wonder what number you are. You have to be a 5. You got to go take this test. But you are
I can't remember what I am.
Is that like?
You're like a researcher.
I am for
like
sure.
Like research everything. Yeah.
I do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
next
you're right.
Next podcast, Blake will have taken the test, and we will let everybody know what number he is.
He's a 5.
My bet is a 5.
He's a 5.
But
if it's like a scale from 1 to 10, I'm probably like a 9 or something.
No,
like that.
It's like different personalities. Mine's a 7, which means I just want to have fun and have a good time, and then that's it. So, anyways, all right. So you went down. You have this list. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I just don't like to have fun. That's
because you're such an old man.
I'm gonna get you a lathe pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I get this thing set up, I'm gonna send you some pens, Jason.
I feel like the first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna CNC a sign that just says "Get off my porch."
So actually, the first thing that I did was—I promised a couple episodes ago in this podcast that I would CNC a pizza.
Did you do it?
Of course. I mean, come on.
Did you really do it?
No, did you really do it?
Of course I did it.
Really?
Oh my god, what?
I need to see this.
Of course.
Where's
I
the
see
footage?
No way.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I owe you $50. Nick owes you $50.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so exactly. I mean, in case anybody thought we were not telling the truth here, and we said, well, I was going to CNC a pizza, I mean, we make good on these promises, man. We're not messing around.
Maybe you're a 5/7, Blake. You're changing my mind here.
So anybody who's listening to this podcast now, it's the future for us now because I haven't posted the footage, but if you're listening, it'll already be on our Instagram account. You can guarantee it, or I can guarantee it for you. There is absolutely a pizza being CNC.
Oh, yes.
It may not be the Mona Lisa like your advertisement, but we may need to work up to that.
So. Oh, yeah. And then in a couple more episodes, Blake's also going to do the footage of his post-mortem epoxy pour. So yes. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah. That's actually going to be on Jason's channel. We're going to see see that one on. Yeah, that cool. One's on you.
All right. Sorry to derail the conversation.
No, that's quite all right. Yeah. So the one of the top things on this list of takeaways that I made is that software is the hard part for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the CNC is it's an amazing machine, and it'll do whatever you input is what you're going to get out of it for the most part. So it's very precise. We had a whole episode last time about precision, and for sure it's a precision machine, but it's only going to be as precise as what you put into it. And the software has been the biggest learning curve. So basically, to break this down real simple, in case anybody's thinking about like getting a CNC, there's basically two types of CNCing, right? Based on the software, would be two-dimensional kind of stuff where you're cutting out shapes, or you're doing basic pocketing and stuff for signs and that sort of thing. And then the three-dimensional realm, which is a whole nother ball of wax. So the two-dimensional stuff is the software that comes with the machine that the company that actually makes the machine. I think for both Shapeoko and X-Carve, they probably have their own like proprietary software that comes with them. But that allows you to do the 2D stuff, pocketing signs, cutting out basic shapes and that sort of thing. If you want to do any of the fancy like actual carvings, you're going to need something else. And one of the ones that I've been messing around with is called Fusion 360. And the best analogy that I can make is that the software that comes with the machine is kind of like the Microsoft Paint.
Yeah,
of CNC software.
Analogy. I love Paint.
Yeah.
I still use Paint.
Yeah. If you want to like make some inappropriate drawings or something to send to one of your coworkers.
You want to drop some old cactus emojis onto a pixely painting, then Paint is your game.
Yes, that's exactly the case. And it's a good way to get started, and it's you can actually do quite a bit with it in the two-dimensional realm, so like signs and cutting shapes out, and obviously just like any tool, the only limit is your creativity in terms of what you can do with it. But it's funky software. I mean, it's like basic stuff that you would think like, oh, let me just like cut and paste, or let me delete this, or let me like bring this back, or just stuff
that's the hard part really for me bizarre. Is because like I have the CNC in my shop, right? And for me, I have this grandiose idea of like, oh, that'd be great to use for like some parts of projects here and there and that. But it's not that easy because you have to know the software. You can't just run over there and be like, hey, quick, cut this out for me. If you don't know the software, it's not that easy.
Right.
Yeah. And that basic software that comes packaged with your machine, it's very simple software in terms of like there's not a whole lot going on there. So you would think like it's pretty easy to use. And I'm sure like once you've messed around with it a bit more, then it probably is pretty easy to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll have to kind of hear more in a minute from Nick on that, because he's probably got more experience than I do. Just once you get used to all the quirks, because it is really quirky software. So on the other hand, is the whole reason that I got the CNC machine is that I want to come at this from like a woodworker's perspective in terms of, let's not just get this machine so that I can build a project from start to finish just purely on the CNC machine, but let's use the CNC machine to kind of enhance my woodworking and come at it from that perspective. So I was imagining, and I still am, doing like complex kind of three-dimensional carving stuff and adding that to either box tops or cabinet panel fronts or that sort of thing. So
yeah,
Fusion 360 has a free version And that's crazy powerful software. But if the software that comes packaged with the machine is kind of the MS Paint, then Fusion 360 is like the Photoshop.
You're only going to probably CNC. Use 10% of it anyway.
Yeah. And I'm actually a professional photographer. I have a side gig as a wedding photographer. And even so, I hate Photoshop. Like,
yeah.
It's a powerful tool, but there's just so many things that you can do with it that it's not super user-friendly for just basic, like, editing photos or whatever. And that's the same way with Fusion 360.
Same way with editing video. I have Premiere Pro and it's the exact same way. It's almost frustrating because sometimes you accidentally do stuff because it's got so many options and then you spend half your time trying to figure out what you accidentally did and undo it. And
yeah, for sure. And in the beginning, every little tiny thing that you want to figure out how to do or just even getting yourself oriented, you literally have to spend let me go research this for 20 minutes and watch YouTube videos or whatever just to figure out the basics. So
I don't want to change topics too much, but I do want to ask a question. So my whole goal in the CNC machine is I think it would be awesome to do certain tasks, right? But there's this new, semi-new, it's been out for a while now, router on the market, the Shaper Origin.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have seen this thing, which is basically a handheld CNC.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's got the LCD screen on there. You can program stuff directly on there. But the cool thing about that is you're not limited by the bed size.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the cool part.
And so you can cut out a 23-foot elliptical conference table with the Shaper Origin if you want, because there's no limitations. You're just following the path along. So in your mind, where's the benefit to having a CNC versus something like the Shaper Origin? Is it a completely different thing or?
Completely different. Yeah. To me, I don't know. I mean, that's a very different tool. It's kind of apples and oranges comparison. The CNC, traditional style CNC with a bed is you lay something down, you program it to either shape something or carve something and it'll do that. But the Shaper Origin, like you said, I think it's more for if you want large, I guess anything that wouldn't fit on the bed of a normal CNC.
Yeah, but I mean, that's one of the benefits of it, but I don't think it's exclusively for that. I mean, I've seen some people carve some really detailed, intricate logos with it as well. I mean, it can do all. I will say the one benefit to a regular CNC over the Shaper Origin is the Shaper Origin is still manual. You still have to be holding it. You still have to be pushing it. You have to be there the entire time. Whereas CNC, you can set it to a task and I say walk away, but everybody I know just stands there and stares at it. But
and actually that brings me to two of the other bullet points that I wrote down on this list is, and somebody corrected on this one when we mentioned it last time, we were like, oh, you can kind of set it and forget it, which is absolutely not true. And sent a little video to us about that specifically, that's not the case. And as I'm finding, that's totally true. You cannot walk away.
No, it's mesmerizing, man.
At least not for, not only is it mesmerizing, but at least where I'm at right now, there's so many things that can still go wrong with it. Like if you didn't program it right, or all of a sudden your bit's going too deep, or like what I did, I ran the bit into the steel table a couple times and took a big old divot out of the steel table. But unless you're repeating something that you've cut lots of times before, and maybe you're using a new bit and you know that your feed rates are low enough to where you're not going to burn your bit out and break it, then maybe you don't need to babysit it quite as much. But where I'm at now, constant eyes on it.
Well, I will say, I think it depends what you're doing, because I definitely know guys that have been doing CNC stuff for ages and they do a lot of production stuff where they're doing the same thing over and over again. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine who lives here locally where I live, and he was telling me how he got one of the Amazon, I think it's the Amazon Echo, where you can plug stuff in to the Echo and then plug it into the wall, and then it basically you can control it all on your smartphone. And what he says he'll do is he'll set a task for his CNC, and he knows okay, this is going to take 3.5 hours. So him and his wife will go out to dinner, and then when it's done, he can turn it off via the Amazon Echo on his phone. he can turn the spindle off. So he'll just leave it and go.
Amazon, build me a table.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, I know there are people that do they set it and they just leave it and they let it do its thing. But you definitely have to know what you're doing.
Yeah. In more of a commercial setting where that's a business and you have definitely like the high-end professional grade machines, then absolutely. I mean, those guys, they use the machines all the time. They know what they're doing. And they know exactly what the limits of their machine is. Totally different from what I'm doing. It's a hobby shop. I'm doing a lot of experimenting and one-off stuff, and, you know, and this is a completely brand new venture to me. But another one of the bullet points on this list of takeaways from this thing is it takes a lot of time. Like, it's not quick. And so that's another thing that you kind of mentioned, the Shaper Origin, the fact that you have to like literally stand there with your hands on it. I mean, you can't push these bits too hard and too fast because you'll just break them.
Yeah, you gotta do multiple passes.
Yeah, multiple very light passes. And another one of the takeaways is that for people who say like, oh, it's not woodworking or it's just too easy, you know, it is absolutely a lot of work. It's just you're putting the work in a different place. So
yeah,
I see kind of two main reasons to use a CNC. Either you want to build something, you want to make something repeatedly. So you want to do all the design work up front, and then you want to be able to make that same part again and again and again. So that's a great way to utilize a CNC, obviously, for production. And then the other one is, which is a little bit more of what I'm interested in using it for, is something that maybe you can't make by hand or with conventional, you know, power tools and that sort of thing. So I'm looking into sort of organic shapes and patterns to kind of enhance some of the square and right angle woodworking that I do.
So,
but like, yeah, go ahead.
Nick, you have the same machine that Blake now has.
Yep.
Are you using it in the way that like you're using it to add to pieces that you're doing, or are you using it to do completely other pieces on your own, like their own product, CNC specific, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have used it for both. So a couple projects back, I did a media console where I cut the drawer fronts on the CNC. So I put up, you know, a slab of a 3/4 inch ply and just cut the complete drawer fronts because I wanted them to be hardware-less but still have a hand grip, so you would reach in. They were inset. Yeah. They were inset flip down drawer fronts, so you would want to have a slot for your hand to pull down the drawer, and I wanted them to be uniform on all three of those drawers. So rather than make a jig or anything like that to cut it out, I just, you know, whipped it up on the CNC and said cut it. And I have a little bit more of a background in graphic design since, like Blake, I'm a photographer and I play in Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator. So I know those programs really well. So I can build everything I need to in those programs and then bring them over into the CNC program to build my tool pass. So I didn't have a big learning gap for those two things. If I was using
Well, you're a lot younger than Blake,
that's
too.
True.
I mean, he's got
actually, days.
I think I'm only a couple of days young. But I didn't have too much of a problem making that jump. But I would say that if I were to come in with no design background and only try and use the software that comes with the machine, I'd be in a world of hurt because it's not very intuitive to making certain things the way you want them to be made, like conventionally.
It really is all about the software.
Yeah.
I mean, you're limited literally by the software or limitless by what you can do with the software.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, because this is my, and maybe it's just because I'm like old school and it just freaks me out, but like I've done a lot of like mid-century style credenzas where you have like drawers and cabinet doors on the front and you have perfect grain match from the cabinet doors to all the drawers to the other cabinet door on the other side, right? Mm-hmm. And if I was going to say like, okay, I want some cool like little handle carved out on those drawers, it freaks me out to try and put that in a CNC because if I mess that up, if I screw up the software somewhere, that screws up the entire face of the entire cabinet.
Yeah.
I can't just throw that board away and then get another one. I have to redo all the cabinet doors, all the drawers, and I have to start over. And I know that like some people would say like a computer is more precise it can't make mistakes like a human can.
Wrong.
But I don't know. I can I can go pretty slow and make sure that like I'm not gonna screw something up, and it just freaks me out to entrust that to a computer. That's just me. Call me
crazy. You're absolutely valid in that. And like, I mean, so far I've been cutting in plywood, and you know, about a third of the time I get some kind of glitch and I'm not really sure where it's coming from. So that's an absolutely valid, you know, thing to worry about. It's only as good as what you can put into it. And, you know, it's a bunch of ones and zeros. It's all, you know, robot speak basically. So learning that language is definitely the steepest part of the learning curve for sure.
Well, and then you could say like, oh, well, you could just do like a trial run, like throw some plywood in there and do a trial run. But then you're not saving any time from building a jig and doing it the other way.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was the last takeaway that I had on the list, is that for anybody that thinks that using a CNC is not work, you know, oh, you just push a button and it does whatever you want. That couldn't be further from the truth. The work is all front loaded because you have to have everything just absolutely perfect, you know, in the programming part of it going in, or it's not going to come out how you want it to be, because the machine is only as smart as what you can program it to do. So all the work is front loaded. It's all up front, which is why for intricate stuff, especially in a production run, it makes a lot of sense. But if you're doing a one-off cabinet and you want some fancy detail, like, you're going to be way better off just going at it with hand tools or setting up a router jig or something like that.
Or even,
it doesn't save you time unless you're producing 10, 20, 50, 1,000 parts same.
Or if you're doing like a fancy cabinet and you want a one-off thing, I am such a huge like proponent of outsourcing things. And if you want something that like is going to be perfectly CNC'd, there are people out there that is their job. They do CNC woodworking. They know the programs to a T, and you can take them and your wood, and you know it's going to be perfect. Like, it's almost worth it for me to do that versus try and figure it out on the CNC. I have the CNC in my shop. I'm not trying to say I'm against CNCs at all.
No.
But I see it more from like, maybe I'll do some like one-off, or not one-off, but like more production products with the CNC that I can, like, this is the thing I do with that. I don't know if I'm going to use it for like specific furniture type pieces. I just don't know if it's worth it for me.
Well, and that comes right back around to the difference that what you're doing is for a business. You're making money at it. So you have to plan out every move of where you put your time. And you do mostly custom one-off furniture for the most part. Whereas for like Nick and I, like, I'm doing this as a hobby, and I'm interested in using the CNC as a tool and trying to figure out how I can use that and just incorporate that into my woodworking. You know, because it's something that I enjoy, and it's a challenge. And again, like, anybody who says, oh, it's a CNC, it's just computer doing the woodworking for you, it's not real woodworking, like, I absolutely disagree with that. And the more I go through this process and learn about it, the more I disagree with that, because you still have to put yourself in the same mindset as a woodworker, you know, setting up a jig on the router or setting up a you know, some kind of bandsaw jig or whatever. It's just, you have to put even more thought into kind of the beforehand part before you push that button, because once you push that button, that, you know, that's it. It'll do exactly what you tell it to do or didn't tell it to do. So, well, we're coming up on that hour, so I guess we should do that segment. What's it called, Nick?
New maker. Who dis?
Who dis?
Who dis? All right. So, because we've been talking about CNCs this whole time, I'm going to bring up a guy named Winston Moy, and his channel, he's both on YouTube and Instagram. He's called Winston Moy on Instagram, but on YouTube, he's called Winston Makes.
On Instagram, he's Winston Makes. I just looked him up.
He's also Winston Makes.
Thank you for correcting me. But this is a guy who actually, I had a chance to meet him in person at Workbench Con.
And I didn't know he was at Workbench Con.
Yeah.
Was it Workbench Con or Winston Con?
It's Winston Con. Yeah, no. Yeah, actually, I think Bob Claggett introduced me to him because I was talking about CNCs, and he told me that you got to go talk to this guy because he not only has his own channel all about CNC machines, but he just started recently working for Shapeoko. So
yeah. Man, yeah, looking at his Instagram page, he does a ton of metal CNCing, which is not what we were talking about, but super cool.
Yeah, he definitely takes kind of the same machine that I'm using, you know, trying to do some basic woodworking on, and really takes it to the extreme of what the thing's capable of, machining aluminum and brass and all kinds of things that I've just been
scrolling through his Instagram. I have convinced myself in the last 15 seconds he's making a robot. It's gonna take over the world.
It's possible he may be a robot because he understands these machines so intimately. It's crazy. And he definitely, he's been doing some tutorial videos for Shapeoko and putting them on their channels as well. But on his own channel, the videos that he's put out have just been invaluable for somebody like me who's just getting into CNC and trying to learn the basics of it. I mean, he really breaks it down to like all the language that I'm not familiar with, feeds and speeds and all, you know, that kind of stuff,
and feeds and
puts
speeds.
It real, yeah, simplifies it for a dummy like me. So it's been a lot of, it's been very informational. His channel, I just keep going back to it and back to it every time I need to learn something new here.
That is awesome, man. So if you're into CNCs, go check out Winston Makes on Instagram and Winston Makes on YouTube. Super cool stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good follow.
Right on, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us again for the Craft Will Never Die podcast. And Jason, Nick, it's good hanging out with you guys again.
Yeah, yeah.
As always. Yeah. And we will see you guys later.
See ya.
Bye.
And cut.